Erfurt does not only have the university and the University for Applied Sciences, it is also home to a high-ranking research center. The Max Weber Center for Advanced Cultural and Social Studies is an institute for advanced study and a graduate school. Very recently, a new scholar came to Erfurt to join the Max Weber colleague, Jui Tiagi, who is in the studio with me right now. Hello, Jui.
Hi, Raphael.
Jui Tiagi studied in Bangalore, India, and The Hague in the Netherlands. She got her PhD in sociology at the Stony Brook University in New York. Her research focuses especially on social movements, but her interests also include, among many other topics, insurgency, development, and gender. Jui Tiagi's PhD thesis was about the Maoist movement in India. The research in Erfurt is about radical armed groups targeting the state. And one thing one could ask oneself, or I ask myself, is why is Erfurt the right place to research into this field, actually?
Thanks for having me here. It's actually not Erfurt by its location, but it's actually the Max Weber Kolleg, which is where I'm located, which is a really good place. So the way we work as researchers is we're in the field, and we're in the field sometimes for months, sometimes for a year or years. And you collect all of this really rich data, and sometimes when you're in the thick of it, you don't really have perspective. And so being here, being at the Max Weber Kolleg, having some distance, having time to look over your data is very, very useful in actually coming up with a good analysis of what's actually going on.
So we'll have a closer look on how you actually work and how you collect the data. But before getting into details of your research project, I would like to understand why you're interested in the peasant situation and if there's any connection between your subject and your personal interest.
I've been interested in peasants because I come from India. And in India, still, close to 60% of our population works as our farm workers. And what's interesting is, as we've been moving into greater industrial growth, we still have a large percentage of workers who are precarious labor. So they come to cities, but they're sort of temporary workers in the cities, always having one foot back in the villages and back in the farms. So coming from that context, of course, you want to work with and look at populations that are that form a major part of the economy, but also form the minor part of the economy in terms of how much they actually make from it. They contribute, but they don't actually get as much out of it. Also, I've worked in the villages for several years before I started my PhD. And that really spurred some interest in me because I saw so many sort of people coming together in organizations. There was, apart from, of course, just the sort of challenges that peasants face. And so this is something that prodded me to think more about the situation, how the situation can change. And that's how I started working with the peasants.
What you're dealing with are these radical groups. And the aim of the radical groups, that's what I want to say, is to enhance the material and social situation of peasants. So what is your aim with this research project? What do you want to exactly find out by looking at these radical groups?
So the reason I got interested in radical groups, like I said earlier, was because you see this whole, there's so many people, you see this whole mass, this whole population that honestly doesn't seem to get their share of the pie. And what I wanted to find out was, how is it that they can get their share of the pie? And so the research that I decided to undertake was how, if they organized among themselves, if you had a workers' movement, what was that going to be able to do to change that situation of theirs? And this is not new. I mean, there's various historical sociological studies that have already showed, you know, having, you know, militant trade unions have made great gains for workers. In fact, that's one of the only ways in which workers have actually been able to fight for their share. What I wanted to do was try and look at some of the mechanisms at play. How is it that peasants can organize, farm workers can organize, and actually manage to get something for themselves?
as I'm neither a scholar nor a researcher in sociology, I'd be interested, you already said something about it, to know how you exactly work. So what kind of material is it that you work with? You said about, you talked about going to the field. So are you flying to India every now and then to make new observations, or how does it exactly work?
So the way this works is you can work with various kinds of materials, right? So you can work with archival material. You can actually go to the villages, engage in ethnographic methods. You can be a participant observer. You can also do with some of what is becoming increasingly popular in sociology in the US, which is, code material and do quantitative analysis. So I do a little bit, I have to say, of all of these. And I invoke a method depending on what sort of questions I'm asking or what I'm sort of tending to find. So what I do is I did spend a lot of time in the villages, and I also spent some time gathering newspaper archives and then coding them to try and also do some quantitative analysis to see what the larger data showed through the quantitative analysis, so over years, and also, to be able to then go to the field and see, how it worked at the micro level. What I haven't been able to do yet, I've been here for just 6 months, but I haven't been able to go back to the field yet. My intent would be, as you analyze this data, so you take really, dense field notes, you come back, and then when you analyze it, when you begin to write, you notice gaps. That's kind of normal. And so what I intend to do is, you're right. You have to go back. You have to go back to then fill in some of those gaps. So sometimes you have new questions as you look through your data and think about things. Also, as you speak to colleagues, you speak to people, you hear people presenting their work, and it really spurs interesting new ideas and ways that your research can move. So yeah, one must always keep engaging with their field. Otherwise, they're going to not represent their field very well.
So after talking about this method, I'd be interested in the contents. So you're comparing two regions in India, one that used to have or has a radical armed peasants movement and one that hasn't. Can you give us some more information about how actually does this radical movement operate? What are their aims? Where is this region? And so that we can have an idea about the daily life there.
Sure. So this research that I've undertaken now is an extension of the research that I had carried out for my doctoral dissertation. In my doctoral dissertation, I had looked at how radical groups become resilient, right? How is it that they sustain themselves over years? Because obviously they have odds stacked up against them. You have the state, which is against them. You have a lot of sort of powerful classes of landlords, of capitalists who really try and suppress these movements in people. So my question was, how against these challenges do they still manage to stay resilient and active? And so the next step that I wanted to take is to see if they do remain resilient, what is it that they're able to achieve? And so then it came to me that one of the regions that I was working in, so I work in one of the states in South India, which is now a newly formed state of Telangana. And I work in one of the districts in Telangana called Warangal. And that's where I had spent over a year doing my field work. And I realized that they were a cotton economy. So they predominantly, most of the farmers farm cotton and they farm chilies. Those are the two commercial products that they farm. And they've had some iteration of this radical movement for several years, which is why I decided to use that as a field site to study. But then you also have another state in India, which is in the north west called Gujarat, which is where our current prime minister is from. And that's been a state which a lot of people have written a lot about how there's so much growth, how there's such a progressive state, how there's so much happening. And I said, man, I'd like to compare my state in South India, my district of Warangal, with maybe a district there. Yeah, I mean, everyone says there's such a progressive state, there's so much happening there. So maybe I'll choose something there that in terms of structural conditions is very similar to Warangal. So they are a cotton growing economy. They have similar proportions of Adivasis, which is the local tribal population. They have a similar representation of Dalits, which is the other extremely marginalized population in the country. And so I found this district after doing a little bit of field work, which was the district of Sabarkantha. And then I said, well, both their structural conditions seem similar. Now let's see, one's had this radical movement going on forever, and one's had different other kinds of movements or not very radical sort of labor or workers' movements. With the movement in South India that's had this radical movement, it's a contentious movement because it uses violence, huh? But what I find is that this movement became resilient when they actually used non-violent forms of organizing as well, where they were able to organize the villagers, make these village groups relatively autonomous, let them work on their own, and only boost them from time to time. That's when these violent movements, ironically, also became resilient. So what I'm trying to say is in these regions, you have a lot of non-violent workers groups that are fighting, that have been organized. And you have to remember, when I say fighting, it's not like every day they wake up and they're going to the battlefield, right? Depends on the situation. Sometimes there's a certain year where something comes up. There's a certain month when something comes up. Otherwise, people just live their lives. They go farm, they have to feed their families. You know, I mean, life goes on quite normally. And I compared it with this district where I told you our current prime minister is from, the state where our current prime minister is from. And I realized that there was a difference, a huge difference in the wages that the labor got. And then I actually go on and trace what led to these differences. What is it that people did? What are the conditions that they faced? And my brief conclusion that I'll tell you very briefly, if you want more, of course, you can read the paper. But a brief conclusion is that when you actually have workers who come together, who actually have organizations, and they constantly then create new contradictions with the capitalist class, and that constantly leads to sort of more class battles, that leads to them actually getting demands, but certainly fighting for higher wages and changes their sort of they sort of have an agency where they're able to change and manage their conditions more than our laborers in areas where you don't have the sort of organizational infrastructure or protest infrastructure.
So to get you right. So now you found out this region with a radical peasants movement, the people are kind of better off. So after writing your paper, would you go back to India to make an appeal to other peasants now to form similar radical movements, or would kind of give the hint, oh, I found out that might be good for you?
I don't have to tell them. I think people already know. I think, like I told you, I'm not the first one to say this, right? I mean, there's enough great material which shows that the only way that workers can make any gains is if they're actually able to join unions, if they're able to form organizations. That's the only way they can get any leverage. Collective action is the only way that they can fight. And so, like I said, I'm not the first one to say it. Of course, what I would like to do is to try and see how organizations that already exist can be strengthened. How is it that we can actually make people's organizations more viable and stronger? And that's why I do the kind of work I do.
In another interview, you said you were planning to be an active citizen in Erfurt as well, and that you were interested in working with refugees, for example. Is it important to consider yourself, or to consider oneself probably also, not only as a scholar, but also as an activist? What do you think about that?
I absolutely think so. I'm a big proponent of that point of view. And the reason that I am is, I know a lot of academics will say, but then you're not objective. Don't we have to be objective economists, objective sociologists? And I find that argument very weak, because I don't think economic theories of, say, neoliberalism are very objective. There's, again, some really great economic sociology that shows that nothing about the way the economy works, nothing about having large corporations, is either the most efficient way to work or either the most profitable. There are various other viable options. We have chosen this form of this kind of economy. We've chosen this form of government. We've chosen these forms because there are certain people who actually hold power. And therefore, I think this, oh, let's be objective and let's not be an activist, is completely untrue. And I think, of course, you have to do emancipatory politics and work that actually will change people's lives. We're not corporations. We're academics who are producing knowledge. And A, you have to make sure that knowledge reaches people, but you also have to generate knowledge that someone and the weakest and the subaltern gain from. Otherwise, I find it useless, really.
One last question. As you have lived and worked in numerous regions and countries already, what is distinctive now about Erfurt? How long are you here again? And what do you find as special in comparison? Or what did you like or what do you not like?
I've been here not for very long. Like I told you, it's just a bit over 6 months. I mean, it's a very picturesque, very pretty town. I guess great for walking and biking and thinking. I think a difference that I see is, compared to some of the other cities that I lived in, I think what really surprised me was the lack of diversity here, right? You don't see a lot of people of color. You don't see, I don't see as many sort of spaces of difference. I see, maybe it's my outsider's eye, but I see many more homogeneous spaces than I would have imagined. And I think that's one of the reasons that I did want to start getting involved in the community here, because I know those people and spaces must exist. The question is, where is their voice and why are they not here and what can we do to change that, to make it just more comfortable and more welcoming to everybody?
Thank you very much, Julie Tiagi, scholar from Max Weber Kolleg, who's researching on farmers and peasants' movements in India and radical groups trying to improve the peasant situation. Thank you very much for giving us these insights and very good luck with your work here in Erfurt.
Thanks, Raphael. It was nice to be here.